What's up, everybody? Alex Kelly here, back with another episode of the Furloughed Film Talks podcast, episode 127, here with my brother Ryan.
What's up, everybody?
We are here on, it's Tuesday, right?
It is Tuesday.
Before we have another winter weather extravaganza here in Dallas, Fort Worth, we are here to talk some movies with you guys. So thank you for checking out this episode after another hiatus.
It's not high. We released an episode last week, didn't we?
No. It was the week before.
Oh.
The week before with the Moon Knight cuts in the middle of it. So thank you for checking this episode.
We're busy, Alex. We're busy people. Yes. We have busy lives.
Ryan has a girlfriend.
Alex has a girlfriend.
Yeah. Everybody, check out our Twitter at Furloughed Film Talks. Or actually, it's at Furloughed Filmed on Twitter. At Furloughed Film Talks on Instagram. We're on YouTube. Go subscribe to that bullshit. At Furloughed Film Talks on Twitter. I'm now a banana meter critic on Twitter, or banana critics. They're like trying to do a different thing than the Rotten Tomatoes thing. So go check out banana underscore meter on Twitter. That's going to be some fun.
Are you like verified?
Yeah.
That's cool.
Kind of, yeah. It's weird. I don't know. It's just like this new thing that they started. So they're trying to like do something different from Rotten Tomatoes.
Tomatoes. Oh, I thought we were going to do our own thing. We're going to do a Max
Jindohead thing?
Yeah, Max Jindohead website. Well, we should get on programming that, please.
I've sold. Oh, yeah. Let me just get right on WordPress to make that a reality, Ryan.
Can't be that hard.
Yeah. But we have a fun episode today. We are going to talk about the Sundance Film Festival that wrapped up this last week. It was 10 days of virtual movies.
Alex is going to talk about the Sundance Film Festival because I wasn't invited.
You were invited, Ryan. You just had to pay $20 per screening.
I knew nothing about this.
Yeah, so we'll talk about that in a second, what my favorite movie was, as well as talk about an event that we went to this past weekend where we saw Jockey, a movie we saw last year at Sundance virtually, directed by Clint Bentley, who was at the theater to do a Q&A, and we actually have an interview with Clint that will be at the end of this episode, so stick around for that.
It's with Clint and
Greg Quidar, the producer, and also teammate, I guess, duo that also did
movie partner,
of Clint. They both did Transpecos together, which also had Clinton Collins Clifton Jr. Yes, Clifton Collins Jr. who starred in Jockey alongside Molly Parker and
Moises Arias.
Moises Arias, who is
a fun first name.
Yeah, Disney Channel star. But before that, we will also review a movie that we were kind of interested in, kind of not, Star-Studded Affair.
Why did we go see this? I don't even know.
Because it's been nominated for multiple SAG Awards, Ryan, and Lady Gaga is probably going to get nominated for Best Actress. So so we'll get to that. It is House of Gucci. So stick around for that review. But Ryan, first to talk a little Sundance. I was not as prolific as some other people in their Sundance coverage.
Oh yeah? Who's more prolific than you?
Matt Nagalia saw 74 movies.
Who the fuck is Matt Nagalia?
He does some next best picture. He's really big. He's got like 74,000 followers on Twitter.
Loser.
Well, he saw 74 and I saw 5. So
that's probably his full-time job.
Yes, it is. For sure.
This is not even your part-time job.
No, it is my part-time job. It's my hobby.
You get paid for a job. You don't get paid for this.
I don't get paid. I get paid in love, Ryan, and going to see movies. So I saw 5 movies. By far the best one that I saw was Living, which wraps up quite nicely with the rest of what we're going to talk about. It got bought up by the same company that bought up Jockey. Sony Pictures Classic bought it for an undisclosed amount of money. But the big story, Max says something in his ear, of Sundance was a movie from a Dallas director. Cooper Rafe sold his movie Cha-Cha Real Smooth to Apple TV Plus for $15 million.
That's pretty good.
Yeah, it's a very good deal. So congrats to a Dallas area.
I thought Apple would be able to put up a little bit more money than that.
Well, they only paid like $17 million for Coda.
That's like 5 iPhones to them.
Yeah, pretty much. I think that's pretty cool. I'm going to be interested to see when they drop Cha-Cha Real Smooth on Apple TV+.
Yeah, because I do want to see that. It looks good. We don't have to wait till Because I hope they don't do what they did with Coda too, like release it with no fanfare.
Also, I was about to say, look up when Coda came out. Google when Coda was dropped on Apple TV Plus, because
I can't do too much googling on my work computer here.
Because that I think will give us some idea of when they will.
August 13th.
Okay, so I was right. August. Because that was like right after Ted Lasso. So they were trying not to do it around Ted Lasso a little bit after.
It was like two or three months before that Tom Hanks movie came out.
Yeah, so I bet that'll be about the same time that Cha-Cha Real Smooth comes out. Is going to be probably August or September. And then hopefully people will have more time to watch it as they get into kind of awards season next year. But that stars Dakota Johnson of 50 Shades of Grey fame. So,
Infamy.
Yes. So I'm excited for that. Also, I'm excited for people to see Honk for Jesus, Save Your Soul. That was a really funny movie.
Did that get acquired?
It has not gotten acquired yet, which I'm kind of surprised by, because it was one of my favorites. It was right behind Living, which starred Bill Nighy. But this starred Regina Hall and Sterling K. Brown,
okay,
about a megachurch duo. Let me fidget with it, Ryan.
No, because you're making noise like right next to the microphone.
Oh. About a megachurch couple who have to rebound after scandal hits their church because of the pastor had done some shady shit.
Literally the only scene I saw from this movie when I walked into you watching it was Regina Hall in whiteface.
Yes, she was being a mime. Which is actually from the short film that they made to have this movie be made. It was like a concept short film. So that was like straight from that.
Interessante.
It was one of the funniest parts of the entire movie. Supposedly, that's a normal thing in black churches. Like,
it's a normal thing to do whiteface?
To do mimes. To, like, that's part of the thing that happens in like southern churches.
Let's call it what it is, though.
It's whiteface. Whiteface. They call it miming. I don't know. Suppose it's like
can we
dancing.
Still call blackface
I don't know. Vaudeville. Do you really want to go there?
No, I don't.
I'm just saying this is what they did.
Super strange.
It was very, very funny.
Why are they doing miming in church?
They weren't. They were trying to get people to get they're trying to get people to come to their first service back.
Okay.
And so they're literally on the side of the road, like trying to entice people to like come into their church. And that's what he walks over to her and he's like, "We need to do it." And she's like, "No." And she's like, "Yeah, we need to do it."
Do what?
Spoilers, which the wife, the miming, and that's what she does. She starts dancing on the side of the road as his mime.
Wait, so that's what church, like black churches in the South do?
Mm-hmm.
They put their...
Somebody puts on whiteface as a mime and they dance.
And they dance on the side of the road?
Supposedly the director said that this was something that was really normal within churches that they
I've knew. Never heard about this.
And that's what they said was people were what the fuck? I've never heard of this. And they're what, you haven't? And they're yeah. So that's why it's in
I
the
feel
movie.
Like this is this happened at his church only, and he extrapolated.
It's two
that
women.
That this is a normal whatever.
Oh really, Ryan? Whatever.
Okay, the filmmakers. Yeah, okay, I go. Feel like this is something that happened at that filmmaker's church, and then they were like, "This probably happens at all black churches."
No, it's supposedly pretty common. So
I'm gonna have to research this. I'm gonna do a full deep dive into.
Please, please do. I want your full report on African American churches doing miming. Mime dancing
in whiteface
in their church
to attract parishioners.
Yes. Well, no, suppose they do it during the worship service.
What the fuck? Okay, you're all over the place with this shit, dude. Yeah. At first it was they do it to,
I'm telling you, they do it in the movie on the side of the road, but supposedly in real life they do it in churches.
What, why do they do it in the church?
Supposedly it's some expressive dance thing. I'm just telling you what I read in this interview, man. I'm regurgitating exactly what I read these people explaining.
I can't pause. That has to be some bullshit that they made up.
If it is, they're just
fucking with the interview.
It's a really elaborate fucking part of the Variety article that they did on him.
So
Ryan's really interested in this movie now.
I'm so confused why they would be miming and dancing in church.
Does anything within Christianity make any sense?
I guess not.
Exactly.
I mean,
so honk for Jesus, save your soul.
So you used to our Presbyterian upbringing, where
with all the Q-tips in there, yeah,
yeah, it's super conservative. Yeah. No one moves a muscle.
No, and all the craziest they get is them pulling bells out.
Yeah, I like the bells. You know,
dong,
bells?
Dong, dong,
dong, dong.
Yeah,
dong,
that's as wild as they get.
Did you ever play the bells?
No,
no, they're fun.
Were they?
I guess.
Cool. Did you?
For a little bit, until I, like, you know, mom got off her, we have to go to the church kick.
Oh, yeah, not, for, like, 4 weeks.
Not
yeah.
be forced to go anymore.
I mean, I had to go for confirmation. Yeah. You had to do that, too.
Yeah, I did confirmation, but that was, like, you went for an hour in the morning on Sunday.
Yeah, and then didn't have to go to church.
Yeah.
Yeah, because, like, well, the best part was, like...
For actually a decent bit of my confirmation classes, like, we went to... the service
we but. Didn't because it was literally like all I somehow lucked out because it was at like 10 a.m
uh-huh.
and everybody that would go to confirmation would all their families would go to the 9 a.m service.
That's nice.
So they would be like, all right, let's go to lunch, and I'd be like, all right. Like,
just go with the
yeah just dip wait, out with
did
them.
You go, did you go to the same did you go
yeah I went to Grace.
So strange.
Yeah, so like, there's an insight to our upbringing.
Yeah,
or just upbringing in Bible Belt Texas,
our childhood.
Yeah,
we're forced to be confirmed in the Presbyterian Church that we frequent, like, less than 5% of the Sundays a year.
I couldn't tell you the last time I stepped foot in that place.
Oh my god, I think for me it was, like, 2016.
Holy shit, seriously?
Yeah.
Oh my god.
Maybe
it probably has been the same for me, I don't know.
Maybe sometime after that, it might have been. The last time I can remember was, like, 20... No, it was 2017.
The funniest part about it is, like, when we got to Christmas this past year,
uh-huh.
Mom was like, oh, should we do, like, a Christmas, like, Eve service? And I was like, nah. She's like, all right. And I was like, yeah. All right, that was easy.
Those, I mean, yeah, she definitely...
Well, and she had her foot, too.
She didn't excuse this year. Last year, we didn't have any excuse. We definitely didn't go.
2020, come on. The throes of COVID.
Oh, I mean, 20... Yeah, you're right, 2020.
Yeah.
We need to go 2019, we have an excuse.
Yeah. I don't know, dude.
How far back do you want me to go? It's like,
you know what?
I make the point.
I could make up an excuse for every year, but I'm just going to stop there.
The excuse is, we're bad Christians.
We're not, yeah.
Yeah.
Is there really such a thing as a bad Christian, Ryan?
There definitely is, yeah.
I don't think there is. I think there's just, we're all just sinners.
The crusaders who raped and pillaged their way through the yeah, Middle East. I mean, those are some pretty bad Christians.
Those are probably pretty bad. Yeah. Probably should condemn those. Yeah.
For our,
so honk for Jesus.
For all of our listeners out there, we condemn the Crusades.
Yes. Because that was necessary. You see what Whoopi Goldberg said today? Or yesterday?
Fucking cares.
What? She basically said that, like, it wasn't about race in the Holocaust, that it was, like, white people going after white people. And people lost their shit.
Well, is Judaism a race or yes. is it a religion?
No, it's technically a race.
It's technically nothing. Yeah, that's true. It's technically
so, like, people lost their shit. Michael Rapaport had some stuff to say.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure.
Yeah.
That's a dumbass thing to say.
Yeah, she was really fucking stupid.
Yeah.
Anyways, yeah, I just saw
how that. How did no one... Stop grabbing shit and playing.
I have to fidget!
Do something that you're not going to bang against the table. All like, right. Just bang against your tum-tum there. I was going to say, fuck.
Whoopi Goldberg.
Oh, is this on The View? Or is this like...
Yeah, it was on The View.
Why did the other few, like, idiots on The View be like...
Because they're also stupid. They just sat there probably silently like, yeah.
That's going to be the stupidest fucking show. Like, let's get...
No, any daytime talk... We're somehow we're still talking about it because I brought it up. But, like, all daytime fucking talk shows are dumb as shit.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, like...
As we sit here and talk
about. But there's life. Definitely, like, a power ranking of talk shows. And, like, getting five women together with literally...
Watch yourself.
Five... Yeah, my girlfriend's not gonna like this.
Yeah.
Getting five women together who have, like, no qualifications among themselves.
Well, and don't, like... And this is why...
Like, Whoopi Goldberg is a fucking comedian. She's not, like, show host,
she's
right?
not somebody who should be tackling, like, the critical, like, problems of our times.
Right, or, like, voicing an opinion on, you know, the underlying causes of the Holocaust were.
Which, like is ironic, Jesus. Because you listen to Joe Rogan, and he's also a comedian, and does the same thing.
Yeah, but they're not, like... Joe Rogan isn't trying to be serious with what he's doing.
Oh, bullshit.
Bro,
every
fucking time he has to go through this, he's like, I'm a comedian, I'm doing...
Yes, but he wants to be, like, he is taking it seriously. Like, he is having serious conversations.
Yo, he's taking, like, his explanation of those, topics seriously. But he doesn't expect anyone to take, like, his opinion seriously.
But that's why, so are you saying, okay, hold on, real fast. But do you think he believes that people who... listen are going to take seriously the people that are on his show, the guests that he has from the questions that he's asking?
He thinks that the discussion should be open and that he should be able to talk to anyone he wants and have any opinion on his show, and then let the viewer have the freedom to make up their own mind.
The same could be said for The View, then. Like, let these five people and anybody that they have on. Because they have guests. I'm not saying.
Like, Whoopi Goldberg has a pretty stringent, like, opinion on the Holocaust that she's trying to get across to her viewers.
Here's the best part about it. She tried to, like, just tweet out an apology. And people were like, you got to go back on that fucking show.
Say, apologize
for this. And she did.
You have to do a full Brian Stelter mea culpa.
Brian Stelter, you mean... No, Jeffrey Toobin.
Toobin.
I saw him on...
that fucking hostage video.
Yeah. I saw him back on CNN the other day. I just happened to, like, flip it on. Uh-huh. And they were talking about the Supreme Court Justice retiring.
Cool.
Breyer.
Sure.
He was surrounded... It was all women on the panel that he was talking to. So, and it was just like, oh, bro, this would be a real bad time for you to whip your dick out right now. Don't do that.
On set?
No, it was like... It was the... Four, like, they're obviously all in different places, but still.
I don't understand how they, like...
How he was allowed to come back?
Yeah.
I don't either.
Yeah.
If you were in the middle of a Zoom... I know what your answer's going to be, because you can't, like, give what a real answer would be right now, but, like...
Uh-huh.
If you were ever in a Zoom meeting, and you were just like, I've got 15 minutes, time to jack it. Like, why would you stay in front of your laptop? Like, I don't understand.
I mean... yeah, let's not.
No, I'm just saying, like, that's such a wild thing to have happen.
Well, but just like, yeah, like, I can understand.
We have devolved from...
I guess I could understand, like, having to use your laptop. Well, okay, no, I can't.
Because, no, you can't. Come on.
Like, if you're using your, like, work... I'm thinking about this way too much. But yeah. You're using, like...
He was on his work... He would have been on his
work laptop.
Yeah, like, so, like, there's your first problem. Which, that's even, like... Let's get into, like, the real meat of this.
Uh-huh.
How did CNN...
Fortress of Words.
How did CNN not fire him for that? Because he obviously was, like, more than likely looking up pornographic material on his, like,
work, I mean, maybe, or maybe not, you know, maybe he just, like,
but they said they did an investigation.
Maybe
so, like,
he's just pulling up his own, you know, CNN article, and he's just, like, going at it.
That would be ballsy.
It's just a picture of,
phrasing.
It's just a picture of, Andrew, what's his face?
Who? Oh, Cuomo?
No, this is the white... Like,
Cuomo Variety Hour.
Who's the white haired dude?
Wolf Blitzer?
No, the Vanderbilt.
Anderson Cooper. Just keep naming off white dudes on CNN.
Yeah, I mean, it's not that many of them. Off.
Brian Stelter, Donnie O'Sullivan. Just start doing it like the SNL like cast listing.
Okay.
All right. Well, this went off the rails very quickly.
Where were we?
Honk for Jesus, save your soul. Go
one more
it.
Like one more random thing, real fast.
All right. Cool. This is just gonna be the random hour.
Yeah. This movie that's coming out.
Moonfall.
No. With what's her face and
Regina Hall.
No.
God damn it, Ryan.
Who's the guy in Arrested Development? Michael Cera. And then...
Oh, Amy Schumer?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that's a show on Hulu.
Oh, it's a show?
Yeah, we got emailed those photos, by the way. That sounds creepy.
Everyone got emailed those photos today.
Yeah.
We
were the first to post the one that the official Twitter from the show didn't post, so...
I would literally rather open every vein in my body than see that show.
Really?
You have no idea.
You have, I did not expect hot takes for you on... Beth and Love or whatever the hell the
show's
called.
Just from four photos of that show, like...
Supposedly the cast is pretty good.
I would really be crucified.
First look and date announcement. Life and Beth on Hulu. Synopsis. Beth's life would look pretty great on paper. Impressive to everyone she grew up with. This is awful writing. She makes a good living as a wine distributor.
Distributor.
That's what one of our cousins used to do. She's in a long-term relationship with a successful guy and lives in Manhattan. When a sudden incident forces Beth to engage with her past, her life changes forever. Through flashbacks to her teen self, Beth starts to learn how she became who she is and who she wants to become. We'll go on her journey towards building a bigger, bolder, and more authentic life, learning to express herself and living in an intentional way. A trip down memory lane is a strong source of trauma, comedy, and moving forward. Interesting. I love how they said it's a... I love how it says an onto... Oh! Michael Rapaport is in this.
Of course he is. That dude will do anything.
Yeah. Ensemble, but I love how it's ensemble cast, and it's literally Amy Schumer, Michael Cera, and then people I've never heard of.
Other than Michael Rapaport.
Yeah. Anyways, I don't know. I mean,
it looks god awful. I was wondering.
We like, just got sent it by the PR people.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. I was wondering why you like posted it, and then I didn't know that the PR people sent you something.
The other, also the PR people who keep sending me stuff for the new Amazon movie that I can start talking about. I Want You Back, which we will be on the red carpet for. Or I will be.
Not we.
I will be on the red carpet for to get as many interviews with day players as I can. And hopefully maybe Charlie Day.
Day players?
I meant like day actors, like people who are only there for one day of the shoot. But maybe Charlie Day, maybe Jenny Slate, and maybe Pete Davidson if he shows up. I highly doubt
Pete Davidson. Why the fuck would Pete Davidson show up?
Did you not watch the trailer? God damn it, Ryan.
I did watch the trailer. I don't remember.
He's in the movie.
So what you sent me this morning?
Yes!
Oh, no, I didn't watch that.
Ryan!
What? You sent me the trailer, and I
wouldn't... You didn't watch it!
I skipped to the part that you told me to. You sent me the trailer, and you're like, go to 1 minute 45 seconds, and that's where I went to.
I said, watch out for 1:45. Hold on. I'm pulling the freaking receipts.
The deets on it?
Not only... Look for someone around 1:45 mark. Meaning, watch the whole trailer. No! Look for someone!
Okay, hold on. You didn't...
Look for someone.
Yes! That seems like you just want me to jump to that part and look.
No, I meant watch the whole trailer.
Well, you should have been more clear, because, I mean, for fuck's sake. I already seen the teaser trailer.
This was a new one!
I don't care!
It's the official trailer. Well, we're watching it and reviewing it, Ryan.
The movie?
Yes!
Why?
Because we're having this people. We're potentially having these people on the show.
You're not having this. You can't.
I can call it that. No, their voices will be on our show.
They're not going to be on our show. They're going to have no idea.
Yes, they will. They are giving us our permission to use their likeness through voice.
Okay. Cool.
I am saying Charlie Day was on our show.
What?
Asshole.
If you get Charlie Day, sure. And Pete Davidson ain't showing up.
He's definitely not. He'll be in New York.
He's not going to be in L.A.
Dude, cool. Back with Kim Kardashian.
It's disgusting. Is he really dating Kim Kardashian?
Yeah, supposedly Kanye West wants to fucking murder him.
I don't.
And he's spreading rumors that he has AIDS.
That Kim Kardashian had AIDS?
No, that Pete Davidson has AIDS.
I mean, I wouldn't be surprised.
That would kind of fuck up his Crohn's, but whatever. Now I hope Pete Davidson's there. That'd be kind of cool. Could ask him Crohn's questions.
Oh, yeah, everyone loves answering Crohn's questions.
Yeah. Fuck you.
Pete Davidson, I too have Crohn's.
Do you want to shit together?
Tell me your worst shitting story.
Let's go get some shabu and see what happens.
Oh, shabu.
Anywho.
Well, we haven't had shabu in a long time.
I know. It's going to be another week.
I mean, at least two.
Well, no. Oh, no, I'm saying it's going to be another week.
Without shabu?
Yeah.
Well, without shabu with you.
Yes. Fuck you. Asshole.
I'm going to get my shabu, one way or another.
Anyways.
By myself.
Ryan, let's talk a little jockey. Let's move away from that.
Have we already reviewed this?
We have, but I'm just saying, like, what was your overall impressions? We saw Jockey this past weekend.
My overall impression is that the Angelica Film Center needs new interviewers. Because whoever they had...
Let's be nice.
Interviewing...
They were nice enough to not only put Jockey into their theaters, they highlighted it with a Q&A afterwards. Where the moderator was interesting. That's all I will say. I will be nice.
The moderator sucked.
All right, Ryan. That's your opinion.
Don't lie. That's the opinion of literally everyone we talked to.
He was not the best. Anyways, Ryan, what was your overall impression of seeing Jockey for the second time?
It's sad, man. It's a sad movie.
Sad movie, yes.
Yeah.
But beautifully shot.
Beautifully shot. Great acting. Good writing.
Cool.
Good narrative. Moved me.
It moved you. Yeah. All right. That's the most vague way of fucking saying that.
I don't know, man. I mean...
I don't know. Fuck if I know.
What are we doing here? Is this a review show?
Yes.
Is that what we do? No, I love that movie. It's great all around. Very sad. Very touching.
It kind of sucks that Sony Pictures Classics didn't do more, like... promotion on it.
Have you noticed when, like, last time you were at Cinemark, was this one of the posters that was outside?
No, it's not at Cinemark.
And it's not been showing at Cinemark? Mm-hmm. So it's only showing at
Angelica and a couple AMCs. So I think Sony Pictures has, like, a deal with AMC, because they sent, like, a list out, or I found a list of when it was, because it's wide releasing throughout the United States this coming Friday.
Okay.
So February 4th. So don't go see Moonfall or Jackass 4. Go see Jockey at your local Cineplex. If it's playing near you.
Can't wait for Moonfall.
Fucking hell.
I'm so excited.
We're talking about that next Monday. Look out for that trip review.
Drag,
your friend.
Yeah, my special friend.
Special friend.
Special friend. Well, actually, we'll see.
The usurper.
Don't do that. Don't.
No, so...
I don't know. We'll see. We're about to get an ice storm, so maybe be socked in all weekend.
Oh, my God.
Walk to AMC.
No, so... It wide releases this week. Yeah, and it's not like any Cinemarks in Texas. And so it's going to be at some AMCs and some different theaters throughout the United States.
Is Spider-Man still in like 20 theaters?
It's overtaking every
20 screens.
And then Jackass and Moonfall are going to take up a shitload of screens this weekend.
Dude, are you going to go see Jackass too?
I'm going to try to. I'm always skiing 2 days. So I'll ski Thursday, Friday, and then everybody else is going to go skiing Saturday.
Oh.
So I'll probably take Saturday to go probably try to see both of those, Moonfall and Jackass 4, and get my banana meter score up. See what that's going to be.
That's cool.
Excited for that.
How much traction is this website getting?
Quite a bit. they're getting some impressions, that's for sure.
This is a chaotic episode.
Yes, it is.
What are your impressions of Jockey?
I very much enjoyed it. It was the first time that we, and this is what I really wanted to talk about. This is the first time in a while that we have seen a movie like a year later, and it's 100% because we had to. Like, most of the time if you like watch a movie like a year later, it's because you like have it on DVD and like you could watch it at any time, and you know for a fact like it's the exact same. But like, this was a movie that got bought, and it was the first time that we have seen a movie before it got bought and distributed. And so it was very interesting to me to like kind of be like, oh, like, okay, like, let's see what I remember, like, let's see if there are any changes, which I didn't expect there to be, but just to have that first experience of like, oh, this was an award or a festival circuit movie that we saw.
It was award winning.
Yeah, it was award winning. I just meant like award season.
Yeah.
But like festival circuit season movie that got bought and now it's being wide released to everybody. So like, to me, that was very interesting and kind of a rare, not rare treat. It's going to be something that's going to be kind of common these next couple of years, but
but it is
it was a first for us.
Yeah, it's a first, and it was actually really, really cool.
Yeah,
it also really drove home the fact that like I really think Texas Theater needs to do something about their like downstairs cinema.
What do you mean?
Because like watching Jockey at the Angelica, where we're not like, you know, 70 feet away from the screen, and like the sound was good. And,
oh yeah, like, it's just a way better
viewing experience. Like, yeah, you know, because I remember it being very cinematographic. When we first saw it, and but I don't remember like the score being as impactful, and like the just entire experience was way more vibrant in like a decent
theater.
Yeah.
But Shane Jokers are really good for that. Like, I know you bitch about the seats and like the food and all that, but
the
like,
seats do suck.
But for the, like the actual like screen and sound quality, like it is, they are amazing.
Yeah. So it's like Texas Theater should, you know, like only they should like get rid of the back like half of the theater.
Yeah, but I mean,
and then like close, I don't think it they off.
Can do that because that's technically where Lee Harvey Oswald was arrested. So
they can lie,
Ryan. That's called fucking with history.
Well, why don't they just like, like do what they did with the upstairs, like divide it in half and then put another screen there and totally enclose that area.
Let's go talk to Barack.
I'm just saying.
But yeah, no, I thought it was a really cool experience. Great, still great. Clifton Collins Jr. absolutely deserves to be in like the best picture conversation, but he's not going to be because there's a lot of other great
best actor
you know, noms right now. So
this, you think this will get nominated for anything? Like, I doubt it, right?
Probably not, which sucks.
Yeah, I mean, but I can definitely see it. This reminded me a lot of reminds me a lot of Pig. Like, a lot like Pig, which, you know,
when I think it's budget,
I don't think that's gonna get any.
No, like any Nicolas Cage might, like, it would be kind of an upset if he gets nominated, but like
that would be a huge deal if he did.
Yeah, I think I'd be so excited if he does. But no, I think just with like what the budget was, because it was under $100,000. So like whatever Sony Pictures Classic had to pay for it, they're not super worried about their return. So they like they didn't really have to put much into like the promotion side of it.
So I don't think
this will be. I think this will do really well once they finally put it on Amazon or wherever.
Yeah, if this ever gets to like Netflix, it'll fucking blow up.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So,
which I don't. Sony Classic Pictures ever get on Netflix?
I know that Sony made a deal with Netflix, but I think that was for like their Spider-Man movies and all that.
Well, that was for like MGM, wasn't it?
No, Spider-Man. They made some deal with Netflix. I'll have to look it up. But it could make it to some, you know, streaming service at some
point. Well, in any like in any case, I think it would definitely be on Amazon for purchase. Right?
Yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah.
So,
no, definitely go check that out. Go check out Jockey, and we'll talk about it with Clint Bentley here in a couple of minutes, as well as Craig Quadar, the producer, and Clint was the director. What?
You want to put it here?
Oh, do you want to put it here?
Yeah, let's just put it here.
Okay, we'll put it right here.
So,
we'll say Clint and Greg were kind enough to talk with us on this episode about a month ago about their movie Jockey, which comes out wide release on Friday. It is in select cities right now, like Dallas, so you can go check that out. So check your local cinemas for Jockey. But here are Greg and Clint. Awesome. So we are now joined by the director and the producer of the movie that was at Sundance. It was at TIFF. It was just nominated today for an Independent Spirit Award, as well as it was at the Gotham Awards a couple of weeks ago. They also directed and produced a movie called Transpecos with Clifton Collins Jr. This stars Clifton in Jockey. We are joined now by Clint Bentley and Greg Quadar. How are you guys doing?
Good. Thanks for having
us. Great to be here.
Yeah, so we kind of said a little bit there about the Independent Spirit Awards that came out today, this morning. What was kind of y'all's initial reaction to that, kind of finding out about that?
Like that we're just laughing because that was our that was our initial reaction. We're super excited. It's been I don't know, it feels like we love the Independent Spirit Awards, and it's a huge honor to be talked about in the conversation.
Really, all of this. I mean, you know, we made this film with our friends, and no real concept of where it would go after, beyond just like chasing this vision that Clint had and trying to render it. You know, with honor, we're just trying to do justice to this world and the story. And so everything that's kind of come from that, we're just like, wow.
Wow.
When you guys got nominated for that, the category where it was on budget underneath, I think it was $500,000. It shows that you make a great movie for a small amount of money. Like, what do you think that says to other filmmakers as well?
Yeah, hopefully that's the thing that, and that's something we've been talking about for a while, is like, you know, when we were a crew of 10 people for under $500,000 making a movie, and we can say well under $500,000, you know, you just, when you have not much in terms of resources, you really lean into the things that is going to make a movie great and believable and watchable. And so if there are any aspiring filmmakers or young filmmakers out there listening to this, just think about that of like, what are the things that you can't pay for that are going to make this movie great? And it's something like, you know, having access to a great actor, trying to tell a good story, and then trying to make all of that as cinematic as possible as you go along, even if you've just got one camera and a small Kino set for lights.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, we also, you know, the common thinking, particularly probably in American filmmaking, is like after you make your first film, the next one go bigger and the next one go bigger than that. Mm-hmm. And Jockey is half the budget of our first film.
Oh, wow.
And going the other direction, I, you know, and it's more intricate than that. It, you know, we devise like a whole kind of unique financial model. It essentially created a co-op where, you know, everyone who works on this film is an owner of a film. Like, we made people partners and treated it much more like a startup. And that enabled us to lower the risk, you know, in terms of the budget, which enabled us to take more risks
Yep.
in the filmmaking creatively. And I think that's something really important for filmmakers to lean into and to embrace that as a strength rather than a crutch.
And it seemed like a big part of keeping the budget down was not only you had some great actors and actresses, but then you used the local jockeys for a bunch of scenes and you kept the scenery really contained at the track. What was it like working with non-actors to include them in the film this way?
Yeah, that was a plan all along that I think even if we had had a few million dollars to make the movie, that would have still been really important, is using first time actors and using people from the world, because they bring so much authenticity to it in terms of when you're thinking about day players who are going to fill out a cast in it and really become part of the texture of the movie in any movie. People from the world can just bring so much that you could never train an actor to do. And so that was really, like, from the beginning was part of the vision, and then ended up, yeah, just making the movie so much better.
And I think also thinking about the strength of a setting, you know, in terms of that giving you a true sense of scale and the movie feeling really ambitious, and Turf Paradise as a location really offered that visually, but also, you know, finding a community like that, that would, you know, let you in and trust you to tell a story within it and give us that kind of access, was really kind of unparalleled.
And everyone thinks about, you know, I know we fell into this category in the past of, like, you look at films that have done it well as it, on the independent side, and you think about, like, how can you replicate that and how can you do that? But really it is, like, leaning into what you have. Like, we were fortunate enough to have a racetrack, and for me being in the world of racing, to have access to that. But you think about movies like a movie like Krisha from 2015, 2016, that was just shot in a home and feels like the biggest cinematic thing that you've seen.
Yeah. Well, and you guys had that scene where they kind of all sit in a circle and they're telling some mm-hmm. of their, like, oh, like, I'm going to call them war stories, but, like,
yeah,
that's where that authenticity comes in, where they can kind of tell stories from their own experience of being a jockey. What was it like doing that scene? And were those real stories, and were there any that you guys had to cut that were like, that's a little too much?
They were all real stories. Those are all real jockeys in that it's almost like an AA scene. Mm-hmm. That was something where there were a few things that when we were writing the script, we were trying to get across. And it always just felt like anytime we'd write a scene trying to talk about some of that stuff, that these jockeys talk about pretty effortlessly, it felt very forced and it felt like very bad exposition. Yeah. And so we just sat a bunch of jockeys around in a circle and just let them talk, which is, they do so well. They tell stories. They spend a lot of downtime in the jocks room between races. So they said it better than we could ever write it. And that scene really just, even though it's breaking form from the rest of the movie, stylistically, and even though it doesn't really, like, add anything to the plot, it adds so much to the story. Mm-hmm. And there were things that we cut, but not because they were bad, but just because of time. We could make a 10-minute doc out of that section.
I think the other interesting thing about that scene is what our hero is doing, which is not speaking. You know, and what's indicative of that is that, you know, all those jockeys were so comfortable bearing their fears and their pain, and where he is, you know, and how maybe it fits into the main story is that he's at his point in his development, he's still hiding all of that. He's still hiding mm-hmm. that pain. He's still very afraid to share that. And so, you know, those cutaways to, like, how he's processing what the other jockeys are going through, and his silence speaks volumes.
Yeah, and you can almost kind of infer that the stuff that they're talking about, that character has been through as well, like all those injuries and everything. So it's like you're adding that depth right there of, you might not see it, but you can imagine exactly what he's been through already as well.
And you can see in his body language, like, he's seen his future in these jockeys. Cause like, there's a few jockeys that are considerably older than him.
Yeah.
He's mm-hmm. like, yeah, I'm like, this is
not going
to
be fun.
This isn't my path. Yeah. And it's not like anything to look forward to.
But the two of you, you guys are both from Dallas. We're from Dallas as well, so this is a all Dallas conversation. You guys have done Transpecos and now Jockey together. What about y'all's relationship or your, you know, your partnership? One directs and then the other produces, and then you guys switch. What has allowed you guys to work so well together?
I don't know, Greg. No, it's something that, you know, it's really nice, actually. It's really rare to be able to have a relationship like this where we write together and then one of us directs and the other one produces and then we switch off. But it's one of those things, like we were talking about on the track, of like having not many resources, but you get so much more than the limitations. It comes from like a deep mutual respect for the other person as a filmmaker, and having two people as distinct filmmakers who also have overlapping interests and tastes, and being able to support your friend as each one of us do go through this. And then also just being a director who can be directing a scene. I know we both benefit from this, and being able to look back over your shoulder when you don't quite know if it's right, or you don't quite know how to solve the problem. And you've got not only someone behind you who knows the story as well as you do, and what you're going for, but also is another director, mm-hmm. And can say like, hey, just simplify this into one scene rather than three scenes. Greg, what do you think?
Well, and yeah, all of that. And then also, you know, we care a lot about community when we make films, and it's the community of artists that we're working with. And it's also the community we're creating a film within. And so the one who's not directing can be, you know, more perceptive, because in the director is such that tunnel vision focus, the other partner can really be nurturing that community of artists and as well as, you know, the place that we're making the film in, and kind of maintaining that culture that's so important to us, and being thoughtful about the footprint we're leaving where we're making the film. And I think that's another added benefit. And then more just in terms of career wise, you know, it can be such a lonely business, you know, and there's lots of heartache, and then there's marked by a few moments of celebration, like today with the Indie Spirit Award nominations, to have someone when, you know, you got sucker punched, who can help give you a hand to get lifted back up, and then someone to high five on those brief moments on mountaintops.
What did that celebration look like today when you guys found out?
Some emojis on a text, you know.
Yeah, it's probably just a text message, yeah, somewhere. Yeah.
It's an amazing situation to be in, but it was like talk for a few minutes about how amazing it is to finally have a movie that's nominated for an award, and then shift into like, okay, who's doing this? Who's taking care of that? Who's, you know, we have these three things to jump on. So probably celebrate by some drinking tonight.
Yeah.
Are y'all working collaboratively, like all through the like post-production process also? Are y'all co-editing the film as well?
We work with an editor, whoever's directing it. And then that other person is just kind of on standby to bounce ideas off of. And again, it's the added bonus of having somebody you can, when you're directing and then directing an edit, you can get so lost in the detail that having somebody who's just a step behind who can like look at it and be like, oh, you know, think about this or go that way and bring fresh ideas to it is amazingly helpful.
And because we both cut our teeth, you know, on the indie streets, you know, you have to learn a bunch of other skills, and we both are competent editors too. And so we also have the project, and, you know, we can try things and share them back and forth, and kind of, you know, in this scenario with Jockey, help Clint formulate his feedback to Parker, our editor, and, you know, just have like that kind of sandbox to kind of collectively play in, to help shape, you know, the decisions that Clint and Parker need to make.
We're kind of speaking on, you know, the editing, but some of the cinematography in this movie is absolutely incredible. And, you know, you guys it's an amazing movie just to watch visually. And you guys, you had it all within this track. What was, you know, either the most difficult or like the most interesting scene to film just because of the location that you guys were in?
One that stands out, I mean, it's so hard because like, it's so hard to pick one because like in terms of things we left out, a question that you had a minute ago, like the track gave us so much beautiful stuff that we had to leave out things because they were so beautiful. It seemed like it was CGI, like really? Some geese flying off camera that our actor is walking out of his trailer. And then the geese turn and come right across frame, right through his, like framed up in the door. It's just like, it looks like a painting, but you almost like can't put it in because it looks too good. But the one that stands out for me is the wild horses. That was something that in doing prep for the movie, I just read about this area north of Phoenix where we were shooting, where these wild horses were at. And then Greg and I went up to see if it was true, just to like check it out. And we found some. And then the night we were going to film, we'd shot another scene and we were filming this one right at sunset. And just, we had no horse wrangler for that. Like you can't predict where or when wild horses are going to come along this miles long stretch of river. And just, we were all walking as a crew, just kind of like quietly, we were getting some nice shots of Clifton by the water. And then right at sunset, right as the sun is dipping over the mountains, you have this group of wild horses come out led by a white mare. And it's just like, not anything you could ever, like, you hope for it, but you could never predict it or schedule for it or anything like that.
I think that has to be one of the most memorable parts of the season movie. Yeah, it's incredible.
I'd say for me, you know, it'd be how the movie opens where Jackson and Leo are on the rail as the horses are exercising and having this conversation. Because that was my first experience coming into the world. I didn't grow up in the world of horse racing like Clint did. And we always embed usually in the stories we write scripts about within the worlds. And we were on a track in Houston and came out at sunrise to the rails, just like Jackson and Leo were. And just watching like those exercises was so magical, so rich in texture and character and place that you kind of knew in that image the possibility of what a movie could be in this world. And so when we filmed it on the day, it was the first thing we shot shooting jockey. We knew we were buckling up for a pretty special ride.
Yeah. And I mean, that scene with the horses, it's Clifton in Moises Arias, you know, going back and forth, and it's such a beautiful scene. But Clifton Collins Jr. is getting a lot of recognition for this movie, and deservedly so. What made him just so perfect for this role? What did he bring to it that just worked so well?
We knew him, as you said in your intro, we worked with him on our first movie, Trans-Pecos, and we had just gotten to know him as a person and as a friend after that. And we just realized, not only he's an incredible actor who needs to be leading more movies than he was leading at the time, but then also he had so much about him as a person that wasn't coming across in his roles. He had such a lightness to him, and in addition to like the hardness that you see in a lot of his roles, he had a lightness and a thoughtfulness to him that we wanted to get across. And we just really wanted to give him a role that could show everything he could do, tap dancing included.
I think he's a carnival worker at Nightmare Alley. So
exactly. Yeah. Playing guitar in that one.
All right. But no, you have Jockey coming out December 29th, and then it'll be coming out wide release in January. Are you guys writing anything right now, or are you working on the next project for Greg to direct?
There's a number of things that we're working on, and that becomes part of, you know, having a career in this industry is, you know, to survive, you got to have all these kind of spinning plates, because you just never, movies have their own timing. You just never know when one's ready to happen, you know, and it's not about sitting idly by. You have to balance like being tenacious and obsessive and like carrying something on your back, but also knowing where to put your energy and what to, you know, put your bet on at any given moment. You know, we're adapting our first book, which will be a movie for Clint to direct. We had a movie that I was going to direct this summer that sadly we lost the financing a week before we were supposed to start. And so
a week before?
So the stroke, you know, when you have like kind of this amazing run with Jockey, like, you know, the life of a filmmaker is still peaks and valleys, and you know, the struggles is always around the corner. But you know, the real trick of surviving all this is to not get cynical and not get jaded, and to still hold on to that kind of childlike joy and passion that you had for movies when you first discovered that there were people who actually made movies, that they didn't just appear magically in front of you.
Well, no, yeah, the movie, real fast, and this last one. You said that you guys are adapting a book for the first time. When will you guys be able to say what the book is, or when do you think that's going to be happening?
We just really started into the process. And so not to be coy about it, but but we'll see. But it is one of those things of like, it is a nice reminder that when you're on a process of like this, of talking about a movie, we spent like 3 years making Jockey. And just to get to the point where we started shooting it. And so it's always like, it's always a good, healthy thing to be working on the next thing, because you realize no matter how good your last movie ended up being, it's still just as hard when you look at that blank page and you're like, oh shit, how did I ever make a movie?
How did I do this?
It's insane. Yeah. It's impossible.
Well, yeah. So Jockey comes out December 29th, limited release. I think it's New York and LA, and then will be wide release throughout January. We definitely should go check it out. And Clint and Greg, really thank you guys for coming on and talking with us.
Thank you for having us.
I really appreciate the conversation.
Thank you much. Yeah.
And that was Greg Quidar, the producer of Jockey, and Clint Bentley, the director of Jockey.
Thank you so much for
super, super insightful talk about the movie and what it takes to make a movie with a small budget. So
from Dallas, Texas.
Yeah, so definitely go check out their movie. It's going to be in theaters starting Friday, wide release. So be on top of that. But Ryan.
Yeah.
You ready?
I think so. Yeah. You want to like tease the audience a little bit? Just give them a little tease.
And then what?
No, I'm just saying like, Let's not give our full Jindo Max Head rating for this movie, but let's like give it some context before we dive in. Like, is your rating for this going to be like, if we stratify it from 0 to 2 and then 2 to 4 and then 4 to 5?
Oh, you want to tease them? You want to tickle the berries real fast?
Yeah,
of
our ratings.
Oh, I see what you mean. Yeah. Oh, okay. Mine is in the. Do you want to go first or should I go first?
So let's just say like, 0 to 2 is 1, 2 to 4 is 2, and 4 to 5 is 3. In what range would you be in?
I'm going to call that tier 1.
Okay.
0 to 2.
We should call it tier 3. That's the reverse what I said.
Yeah.
Tier 3.
0 to 2.
Okay.
What about you?
It's definitely tier 3.
Okay.
If there was a tier 4 perfect. That was like 0 to -10, I would choose that.
You would throw it in there?
Yes. Okay. But
we are talking about the latest Ridley Scott movie, because that old geezer just keeps pumping movies out. It is called House of Gucci, starring
Adam Driver,
Jared Leto,
Lady Gaga,
Al Pacino,
your mom,
Jeremy Irons. Really shit the bed on that one, Ryan.
I'm sorry.
Yes. So, Ryan, what
Annette
is...
Annette from Annette.
Chip, I wish. Ryan, what is House of Gucci all about?
Well, it's about the Gucci family from the late 70s until they eventually sold the company to investors. And all the fun goings on that happened in that decade and a half.
Okay.
All the treachery and the backstabbing and the sex and the money and the the champagne.
The champagne. So it centers around Mauricio Gucci.
Adam Driver.
Who marries Franciszki Raggiani. A lot of Italians.
Lady Driver, Lady Gaga.
Who Mauricio's father, who is the son of the founder of Gucci, does not approve of this new usurper, as it were.
I like that word a lot.
It's really funny to me. So I bet you could get a lot of money for this Figment pencil.
Put the fucking pencil back.
So they basically like get married, and it's the story as like Gucci's trying to like make their way back. And it has a very shocking ending that we will not spoil here, Ryan. Because I kind of spoiled it for Ryan about 15 minutes before it happened.
Yeah, you're a real dick.
I didn't know. I thought you knew, okay? Like, I wouldn't have said it if I didn't
what
think.
What indication did I give you that I knew what was going to happen?
Because you're such a history buff that you're like, I know everything about everything in the world.
I had no idea that, you know.
Shh. Spoilers. I'm not going to say anything.
I was going to say that. I didn't know anything about this story.
All right, so Ryan, you have already said
this. I went in blind as
a bat.
Yeah, a 90-year-old Grace Presbyterian parishioner.
Yes. You gave this a tier 3, 0 to 2, head max, whatever.
Gender max head rating.
Yes.
Yeah.
Why? What was your overall? Because that obviously means you did not enjoy it.
Uh huh.
What was your overall problem with said movie, House of Gucci?
Okay, this movie is definitely like a composition of horribleness and not like one glaring weakness, right?
Okay.
So, I mean,
where to start?
Yeah, where to start? I think, I mean, if I had to choose the biggest problem with this movie, it's most certainly the fact that it like was the most disjointed movie I had ever seen in my life, right?
Yeah.
Like there's no flow to the narrative. There's no connective tissue between the majority of the scenes. It just jumped from like story beat to story beat to story beat. And in a lot of cases, like really kind of violently and, you know.
We're not just like story beat to story beat, but would like jump years.
Yeah, that too.
Like, at one point, they, like, had their first kid, mm-hmm. and then it, like, in a couple of minutes, it's like, oh, that kid's, like, 4 or 5 now.
Right.
Like, this is obviously a passage of time that, like, the audience is other than, like, seeing that that kid is older, don't really know that a bunch of time has passed,
mm-hmm.
and then you don't know, like, what happened in those 4 to 5 years.
Right.
So and there's that's no like character development in that.
That's important to say, because, like, this movie literally takes place over at least 16 years. It starts in like 79.
And then it's ends up in
like 96 or so.
95. And then it jumps, I guess, to 98.
Right, right.
So
yeah, really like almost 20 years of storyline. And it was like really hard to tell sometimes at what part of the timeline you were in.
Yeah.
You know, there was like small indications like the age of their child or them explicitly saying, you know, what year it was or them like giving it a title screen what year it was.
So it starts in 1978.
Okay.
And then it says 1997.
Yeah. Okay.
Wait. Yeah. So it looks like it was almost 22 years.
Okay.
Patricia.
So yeah, I mean, that was a big problem where just like, it was just poorly. And I have no idea if, you know, the source, the underlying script and source material was like that.
Okay, or so
like
97. So.
If this was just really, really poorly edited. I can't imagine this was like, you know, like a fuck up on the editing side. This seems like it was just a really poor construction storyline wise to like fit so much timeline into it's actually insane because like this was a 22 year timeline but somehow they made it seem excruciatingly long.
Yeah, it was 2 hours and 40 minutes
by making it a 2 hour and 40 minute movie. And then
they
like
jump all around like
right. Yeah. So, okay. So that was like super frustrating.
And the initial, like, just glaringly obvious problem with the movie was a combination between overacting and literally non-existent chemistry between Adam Driver and Lady Gaga.
With what was by far one of the most absurd sex scenes I've ever seen.
Yes.
Like, that was one of the funniest fucking things I've ever seen in my life.
If Lady Gaga has sex like that every time she has sex, like, I feel bad for the people in her life, because
it looked like she had an on-off switch where, like, she vibrated, where it was, like, on was her vibrating.
Well,
it was
the fucking
wildest shit I've ever seen.
You see the face she made?
Yes!
Like, halfway through? I mean, I don't even know what, like...
We were dying. We were laughing so
hard. I was laughing so hard, and it looked like, you know... She literally had her foot amputated in the middle of passionate lovemaking.
Yeah.
It was the fucking... But not even that. Like, that was funny, and that was really weird. But it was kind of, like, inconsequential to the story.
Mm-hmm.
But it was, like, actually consequential to the story was the story of how these two fell in love.
Yeah, and they don't do a good job of that at all.
Oh, my God. It's so piss poor. Like, Adam Driver visibly looks like he wants nothing to do with Lady Gaga within the, like, first... four or five scenes where they first meet, and then they see each other again because she stalks him.
Yeah, she literally shows up to, like, the library he's studying
at. Yeah, and so they have, like, these few scenes where it's supposed to show, like, oh, they're falling in love, and look at this, like, connection they have. And Adam Driver literally looks like, someone get this lady away from me, because I'm, like, visibly upset about her being around me. And then within... 5 minutes, he's telling his dad that he's in love with her and wants to marry her.
Which, like, I...
Made zero fucking sense.
I compared this to another, like, what is supposed to be, like, autobiographical movie, which was American Underdog. It was the Kurt Warner movie.
Okay.
Where, like, they spend the first, I want to say, like, 40 to 45 minutes establishing how Kurt and Brenda Warner met, fell in love... started their marriage, and then, like, to the point where he got to the point where he was playing in the American or the Arena Football League.
Mm-hmm.
So they took the time to really develop this relationship and show how it got to that point where he was with the Rams.
Uh-huh.
That was all writing. That was chemistry between Anna Paquin and Zachary Levi.
Sure.
Like, that worked really well. This, it was like, oh, we are sexy and Italian. I like your money. Let's a fuck. And like, yeah. That just like is all it takes. And what they focus on more is not why they're disapproving really of this person, but the fact that like his father and the family as a whole doesn't approve of this marriage.
Mm-hmm.
And that's like how they start this movie off. And it's just not... it's disconcerting and like disorienting. You're like,
yeah, it's just what weird.
The fuck are y'all doing?
It was just like a weird, just the way those they constructed those initial scenes with them together was like really strange, because I know they were trying to show Adam Driver's character as this kind of insecure, nervous young guy who, you know, like I supposedly has a crush on this girl and it, like. Unsure of himself around her, but it really came off, and I like it might have been bad acting, but I don't think that's the case, because like Adam Driver is literally the best part of this movie once you get like 20 minutes into it, which isn't saying much.
Well, I would have said Jeremy Irons was
okay. He's one of the best parts of this movie. He's like one of, you know,
two
actors in a ensemble cast that like collectively shat the bed. But you know, it probably was bad writing, because the rest of the movie was definitely bad writing.
Yeah,
the way they put the rest of the movie together.
Let's talk about the elephant in the room real fast, or the Max in the room, if you will.
Okay.
Jared fucking Leto.
Yeah.
What the fuck?
I don't know,
dude.
That is another thing. Okay, Jared Leto's like introduction into this movie, pretty much was like that him playing rugby at.
His
father's birthday party.
Who's his father's played by Al Pacino.
Right. And it's like his father's 70th birthday party or some shit like that. And for some reason, all the Italian like men are playing rugby. And Jared Leto's character gets like knocked to the ground. And, like it's a bloody lip. And they literally like pan over Jared Leto's face. And he just like yells into the camera like a
wounded Mario, he just yells, "Oh, Papa!"
Yeah, I forgot about that.
And then it cuts to the dinner scene of the birthday party.
It was very strange. But, like, he got nominated for a SAG Award for this.
Which is insane. For supporting actor, right?
Yes. Okay. Which, like, that makes, like, there had been the rumor that, like, people had talked to certain SAG Award voters.
Yeah.
Who, like, supposedly they've, like, let in influencers and TikTokers and all this different shit into, like, voting. And they had said, like, oh, I didn't even watch all the movies. I just saw Jared Leto and liked his music and voted for him. And Lady Gaga and voted for her. It's like,
they probably are all part of Jared Leto's cult.
But that's what I'm saying. Like, I was like, okay, that's bullshit. Like, there's no way that actually happened. Having seen this movie, that absolutely happened. Because you cannot watch this movie and be like, that's award worthy.
There's no rational world where Jared Leto or Lady Gaga gets nominated for anything in this movie.
It's, oh my god, the acting is so bad. And it's 100% comes down to they were American actors for the most part. I think all of them are.
Yeah. Okay. Well,
let's just say English actors trying to play Italians.
Right.
With Italian accents that are god awful. Like you said, he like screamed like Mario. He sounded like Mario the entire movie.
Yeah, yeah. You know, and like I thought, like, to be completely fair, most of the time the accent's pretty decent. 100% of the time Jared Leto's accent was bullshit. But I mean, like,
and Adam Driver's too. It literally just sounded like him with an Italian accent.
Yeah, I mean, but it was like it was decent enough, right? It wasn't like Jeremy fucking Irons where he didn't even try.
No, like and Jeremy Irons
literally had an English accent in this movie.
He didn't give a shit.
No shits were given by.
Yeah, and Jeremy Irons was one of the best parts of this movie. Like,
yeah,
he showed up and I was like, oh, okay, like this is actually decent. And then like he's in it for 15-20 minutes and I'm like, oh, this movie's back to being shit. All right, cool.
The quintessential scene in this movie to like just make people understand how absurd and awful it was there's a scene where Al Pacino gets out of prison and goes back to Jared Leto's home.
Yeah.
And then Jared Leto tells his father that he has sold his shares of the company. And this literally, I can picture the fucking writers in the room going like, we need an Al Pacino gets mad scene. How are we going to do this? And they're like, I know. We're going to have Jared Leto tell him right after he gets out of prison that he sold his shares.
Yeah.
And now Al Pacino's character no longer has a majority or has like an equal voting right with whoever owns his brother's shares, which is Adam Driver's character now. And like, the overacting by Al Pacino in this fucking scene. Like, you tweeted afterwards, oh my god, this is like, you know, a really good performance by Al Pacino. From that fucking scene, I was like, this has to be one of Al Pacino's worst performances ever. Like, just please hang it up, bud. Like, just stop, enjoy your money, enjoy your cocaine, whatever the fuck you do these days.
Yeah, I don't know what Al Pacino does.
Just stop.
Dude, I thought that scene was over the top, but the rest of it I thought was like genuinely
okay. The acting by Al Pacino in that scene was like,
well, same in that scene.
We could dress Max up in an Italian suit and he could do a better job.
An Italian suit.
Yeah.
I thought you meant like the fat suit Jared Leto also had on.
We can put Max in a fat suit then an Italian suit. Or an Italian jumpsuit. Like,
I don't think he would like that very much.
I doubt it.
Yeah, if you can't tell, we did not like this movie.
I really didn't like this movie.
It was very bad. So, Ryan, what would you give? Hold on, real fast.
Okay.
It is wild that Ridley Scott put out a movie like this, not like a month or two after he put out The Last Duel.
I was just about to ask. He did, this was the same man. This was the same Ridley Scott that made The Last Duel, right?
Maybe he does what, like, Mom Thinks Nora Roberts does. He just, like, has people ghost directing for him.
Maybe, but, like,
because he puts out a shitload of
movies. Let's be fair, it's not like The Last Duel was a masterpiece of filmmaking.
It was better than this, though.
It's better than this, but it did include two very graphic rape sexual scenes. Assault scenes.
Yeah, that was a...
which, like, no one needed to see.
Maybe Ridley Scott just, like, really wants to keep putting sex scenes into his movie.
Like, really just bad sex scenes with Adam Driver? Maybe it's just a fetish for Adam Driver.
That would have been a crazy thing to see him, like, directing him for the House of Gucci sex scene where he's like, all right, Adam, remember, this isn't a rape scene. That was last movie. This, you love her. Okay? Yeah. Don't make her vibrate like that. Jesus Christ, Adam.
What do you mean by vibrate?
She literally was like, and she's like, ah, she's like, ah.
Have you ever seen a woman orgasm?
I have, right? But like, not like that. She looked like the Energizer Bunny. It was not natural.
That's just how Italians have fucking...
How Italians orgasm?
Yeah.
If you had your bingo card at home, scratch off Italians orgasming on it.
Yeah, the Italian... Wow. What would I give this movie?
Yeah, let's go to that. Just your Max Gendo head rating.
Again, for context, like, we collectively got up at the same time to go to the bathroom, like, an hour into this movie, just so we could, like, shit talk it. And Alex...
Well, I had to pee, but whatever.
We both had to pee, but we both wanted to shit talk it.
Okay.
And Alex asked me, like, hey, what would you give this rating so far? And I was like, if I could, I would give this a negative 10. Like...
Yeah.
This is one of the...
I asked you, like, legitimately, what would you give it? And I think you said, like, 1.5.
Yeah. And I've never walked out of a movie. Like, and I would have walked out of this movie.
Bro, I had that same thought. The last movie, it's not as bad as this movie, but the last movie that I legitimately, like, wanted to walk out of was Zoolander 2. And there was about 30 minutes into this where I was like, I want to leave. Like, this is not good. If this were at home, we'd turn this off.
100%.
Yeah.
Like, I really wanted to, like, go up to the ticket office and be like, I need my money back. Like...
Yeah, I don't think that would have happened. But what would you give it on a Max Gendo head rating, Ryan?
I'm gonna stick close to what I said halfway through, but I'm gonna give this a 1.25.
All right, I'm gonna go 1.
Damn, this is fun.
It's bad. It's really bad. Like, it's not a good movie, and I don't.
That's. I think this.
It has a 63% on Rotten Tomatoes. I don't understand.
The critic score.
Yeah.
Dude,
I bet the
audience score has to be lower than that.
You want to take a bet?
Yeah.
I'm pulling it up right now. I have not looked at it. I do not know yet.
Okay.
You say it's lower than 63%?
I guarantee it's lower than 63.
I'm going to agree with you.
Okay.
No. I'll say it's higher.
Not much of a bet.
$5.
Sounds good.
All right. 83%! $5.
How does this have an 83%?
I don't know, dude. It's not good.
People have no taste.
It can be slow going, but House of Gucci adds up to a fascinating story, and Lady Gaga's performance is a knockout. No, it's not. Okay, this is the critics' consensus. House of Gucci vacillates between inspired camp and dour drama too often to pull off a confident runway strut. But Lady Gaga's note-perfect performance has a timeless style all its own. No, it doesn't, dude. Like, it's not a good performance. Christ almighty. Anyways, don't go see House of Gucci. This is a dumpster fire review, for sure.
Absolutely, yeah.
So
Do not hurt yourself.
Go see Jockey.
Practice self-love and don't see this movie.
Be ready for next week's review of Moonfall.
Just kidding. It's February, people.
Yeah. Oh, it is. But thank you to Clint and Greg for coming on the show. That was super badass. Thank you to everybody who helped make that possible. And be looking out for our next episode. That will be out next week. But thank you guys for listening to this. Go check out our Twitter at Furloughed Film, on Instagram at Furloughed Film Talks, and on YouTube at Furloughed Film Talks as well. And everybody, enjoy the rest of your week. And we look forward to talking movies with you next time.
Adios, amigos.